Hall & Wilcox acknowledges the traditional custodians of the lands on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to all First Nations people joining us today.
Hi, and welcome to our Smarter Lawcast on business restructuring and being risk ready. In this episode, we are discussing how professional service firms can restructure equity and manage owner exits when things get tough. My name is Scott Butler, and I'm a partner in Hall & Wilcox's dispute resolution practice, specialising in restructuring and insolvency. I'm joined today by Jackie Barrett and Nicole Tumiati, who are partners in Hall & Wilcox's corporate and commercial practice. Jackie and Nicole work with professional firms across many different industries, assisting them with issues impacting their ownership structure. Jackie, Nicole and I are all part of Hall & Wilcox's restructuring and turnaround team, which focuses on assisting underperforming businesses to restructure their business affairs so that they can survive and thrive. Welcome, Jackie and Nicole.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you, Scott.
An important part of the success of any professional services business is having the right ownership structure in place. And for professional service firms, the owners are often, but not always, actively involved in the day-to-day business, and the performance of each owner can have a direct impact on the business and its financials. So Jackie, what are the common reasons why a professional services firm may be forced to change its ownership structure?
Thanks, Scott. I think for my purposes, I'll focus perhaps on some of the negatives and just, I suppose, thinking about professional services and also in the context of smaller business, there are some unique issues that can arise that will cause a business to have to restructure or look at their structure. First one, and I think one that's probably relevant to lots of people at the moment, is the business might be undergoing financial difficulties. That might be because of the market. It might be because a drop-off of customers. The economy is not going so well, but that can always put pressure on partners in a business. The second would be the breakdown of the working relationship, and particularly in a small business, that, you know, you're so invested in the business, you're working so closely together. If you're not getting on, that can really have a big impact and certainly make you think about whether or not you really want to be in business with the other person. And so that can be really the trigger for looking at your structure and whether or not and what your exit arrangements might be. Another one would be where you have one owner working really hard and succeeding and the other owner is underperforming and not contributing. Now, that might be for lots of reasons. They might have personal stuff going on, et cetera, but that can put a lot of pressure on the relationship. Another one is where there's a dispute between the owners as to the future direction of the business. And that could arise because one owner has other business interests and they're trying to juggle a few things, and the other one might be more focused on that particular business. And so there's a bit of a disconnect on what sort of what their growth objectives might be. And then finally, a loss of a major customer can also have a big impact, Scott.
And so they're all the, let's refer to them as the sort of negative reasons why you might need to change the ownership structure. But I assume, Nicole, there are some, you know, good stories as to why you might need to change the ownership structure.
Yeah, there could be a number of, what might frame as positive reasons why a firm might reconsider their ownership structure. For example, if they want to bring a new partner or a new owner into the ownership structure, and the reasons for that might be, you know, they might be bringing on a new owner that's got connections, additional investment or a skill set to effectively help with the growth of the business. So that might be a reason to revisit the current ownership structure to see if it's suitable for bringing on new owners. And similarly, if you've got employees that you want to bring into the ownership structure, and there might be a number of reasons you might want to do that. It might be to incentivize them, or you might be at a sort of stage where the employee is effectively, you know, you're paying them as high a salary as you can justify in the market, and you need some other way to incentivize them and to make sure that they're aligned with the business.
Okay, so there are clearly a variety of reasons why change to the ownership structure might be needed. But Jackie, what are some of the key obstacles to the owners negotiating an acceptable outcome for in respect of these changes?
I think it does depend on what stage the owners are at. In my head, there are kind of three stages. One is the planning stage, where things are going quite well. There's still quite a good and amicable relationship. The business is growing, or at least bumbling along as it should. Second is where you're starting to see issues. Maybe disputes are arising. There's some financial difficulty. And then the third is where there's a complete breakdown. And so in terms of obstacles at the planning stage, the obstacles can be that you have, I suppose, a divergence of opinion on the direction of the business. And so that can really delay things and cause problems for both parties. This can sometimes arise because you have people who are at different stages of their life or career. So I've got a good example of a client who was a young go-getter, frankly, and really building and got into business with a very established group. And their objectives as to how they saw the business growing and what they wanted from the business were vastly different to her own. And that did cause challenges for both parties in terms of really being able to reach agreement on their plan and how they might document their relationship moving forward. But moving to the other stages, there would be that issue of more fights breaking out. They just really can't reach agreement and the business being under financial stress. And then finally, that complete breakdown where you might be having to look at getting administrators in or looking at least having assistance from lawyers and mediators in terms of resolving disputes. And so in that scenario, of course, it becomes very difficult to negotiate an outcome that's acceptable to both parties.
Yeah, okay, and I understand that. So if we sort of continue to drill down a bit on the situation where the relationship between the owners has really deteriorated, I guess what sort of things, I can imagine a few of them, but what sort of things have you seen happen between owners when there's this, you know, real falling out between the owners?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got quite a few examples, particularly in recent years. I think maybe COVID hasn't helped any of that, but one in particular, in professional services business, small business, crossing two states. There was one party who was our client, and they were really the key person behind the growth of the business. They were driving it forward. It was all their networks. It was really all of their work in building the business. But because she was at a stage of her career where she wanted to expedite the growth and capitalise on new opportunities and needed financing to do some of that, she partnered with another group that were more senior and experienced. And that's quite relevant to this story because ultimately, again, their objectives and their goals for the business really didn't align with her own. And so they saw it as really as like a side hustle, whereas she saw it as her main engagement, obviously main business. And that even that disconnect at that basic level really gave rise to a lot of disputes and problems. But in that example, there were lots of issues. One of the key issues was that she had been given a shareholder agreement, which is always a great starting point. And Nicole and I will talk about that a lot in this podcast. But one of the key issues was she got the document and just signed it because she didn't want to lose the opportunity. So she didn't really read it. She didn't really focus on its terms, was told not to worry about it. And then, of course, when things started to go a bit sideways, of course, that was the document that they were left with having to deal with, and it had some very unfair terms in the agreement. There were also issues around the way profit was distributed, and in the view of course, our client, not fairly. She was underpaid as an employee, and profits were split equally between them, and so there was a sense that she was not being remunerated properly. There was also suggestions that IP was being moved out of the business into the wrong entity. The silent partner was charging additional services without actually delivering services. And so, as you can imagine, things started to turn very pear-shaped. But these are just, I suppose, some of the ways things can go wrong. In that example as well, she was locked out of bank accounts. She was locked out of looking at Xero, particularly when she started to raise questions at the board. She was on the board, but she was outnumbered, unfortunately, 2-1. And so she really was left in a position where she didn't have any decision-making power. There were accusations of bullying. She had workplace issues. She had to go off work for a period due to stress. And so it sounds quite extreme, but this was really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of things happening that created massive problems for both parties in that business.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound a bit extreme, but I think the reality is that this happens, you know, more than we think. It's not an outlier. Certainly does arise. Any other examples of, you know, situations which have gone a bit pear-shaped?
Yes. Another example, and this is where, in this case, there were just the two parties, and probably the main thing that went wrong for this business was that one partner stopped performing and contributing in the way that they should have. And it wasn't due to, you know, things happen in life, and we know this. People have issues with their families, they become unwell, you know, but it wasn't due to those sorts of factors. Of course, COVID did happen during this period, and that had an impact on the business overall and its opportunities in the market. But ultimately, it was linked to the lack of contribution by one party, but that party still taking large amounts of leave, still taking the same salary, still spending money on the credit cards without any sort of supervision or consultation with the other party. In that case, they had a lot of bank arrangements in place. They had a lot of their personal property tied up as guarantees and security. But then there was a side issue, a lot of undocumented loans. And so that created even more complexity in trying to work out a way that they could really part ways effectively, and they could continue working on their other businesses and objectives, because they were both, in a sense, trapped in this financing arrangement. There was also arguments around perhaps some issues of fraud, there were big issues with intellectual property. And, you know, in professional services businesses, as we all know, you know, the client lists can be absolutely critical to the business. But in addition, they had developed bespoke software, and there was key business records and marketing materials that were being used in the business that one of the partners just moved to another entity and started using. And so, another example of a lot of different things happening. And I would probably make the observation is that once things start to go pear-shaped, people do tend to panic a bit. They look to protect what they've got in their control, and they'll often do things thinking that it's okay, like moving IP into another entity. I think there's often a bit of confusion about who owns IP and who's allowed to use it. But what you find, if there's no real plan, and I would say in this case, there wasn't a proper shareholder agreement either, and so there wasn't any plan for them to follow in terms of being able to step through how to manage a dispute and step through how to manage an exit. And so they were left really just trying to work out what to do, but coming from behind. So all of these things had happened, and they had to play catch up, essentially.
I think we'll come back to obviously talk about how you deal with that sort of situation or put steps in place to prevent that occurring as best you can. But Nicole, those examples are really illustrative of situations where things go really downhill. But I assume there are situations where the owners actually handle this whole process of change, you know, much better than that and more civilly.
Yes, there definitely is. And we recently helped a business that did a number of these things that really helped them, build in mechanisms in which changes to the ownership structure could be dealt with in an orderly fashion and in a way that was fair to all of the owners. In the example I'm thinking of, it was a business that had about 10 owners. Traditionally, they had been state-based, so that there was a structure that recognised that that had subsidiaries in each of the various different states. They were a business that had owners at different stages of their career. Some people were just starting out as an owner, and others were wanting to retire in 2 to 3 years. So they knew there were certain issues both with the structure and with sort of succession planning that they needed to address head on. And the ultimate goal was to nationalise the firm and put in place procedures where new partners could come in or new owners could come in and people who wanted to retire could. But I think for the purposes of this discussion, it's really the things that they did that are important, not necessarily where they ended up. And the things that they did was, for example, they brought in an independent CEO who didn't have any ownership interest. Now, not all businesses can, bear that cost of bringing in an independent CEO, but it wouldn't necessarily need to be someone who was actually employed in the business. It could be an independent consultant or some other third party who's really there to protect the interests of the business as a whole, as opposed to individual owners. And what they'll be concerned with is the business as a going concern rather than a snapshot of the business with the current ownership. So having that, that independent person can be particularly helpful. The other thing they did was they engaged with advisors early, particularly regarding tax. There was a recognition that any changes to the structure were likely to have tax implications. So rather than get too far down the road of this is what we want to achieve commercially, the commercial discussions and the tax discussions were had hand in hand, so that at each stage we knew that we weren't creating a structure that was going to create any issues for the owners, whether when we restructured or when they went sought to exit. I think one thing that they did very well in this particular example I'm thinking on is they had really honest and frank conversations about what people wanted to do in the business. For example, and it's not easy to have these conversations, but how long did people want to continue working? Was their plan to stay working two years, 3 years, 10 years? And for everyone, that could be different. And, sometimes it's not always within their control, how long they can stay in a business. But having those difficult conversations and being open about it was really helpful. A lot of time was spent considering questions of value. And that did include getting a valuation, a current snapshot of where the business was, but also how the business would be valued going forward, so parties had certainty. And in this particular example, we decided to build in a valuation mechanics in the governance document, so everyone knew when I leave, this is how the value is going to be calculated. And it was a mature business, so we could do that. The other thing we considered around value is we had a look at whether or not a goodwill model versus a non-goodwill model was appropriate. And by that I mean is, could we shift from a model where parties had to actually pay to become owners, and then on the flip side that they would receive a payout, they've received good, a good value consideration for their interest when they sold. It's not unusual for some professional services firms to move away from that model to make it easier for people to bring new partners into the structure. And then the other thing we talked about with value was how we valued individual performance. And with professional services firms, it's quite common that the owners are actually working in the business. So it might not be equitable to actually divvy up the profits of the business on a pro rata in share according to the shareholding. It might be, and in this case, we actually looked at creating special classes of shares and things like that, that it were tied to performance. So value was a very important part of what we did for the business. And then, we also looked at what an orderly exit actually looked like. And part of that discussion was We had a number of partners, a number of owners who were looking to leave around the same time, but it would have a negative impact on the business if we were to lose, say, one quarter of the professionals who were actually working in the business. When I say professionals, I mean the professional owners. So we actually agreed amongst all the partners that there would be time periods within which the owners could retire, so such that we didn't have everyone trying to retire at the same time. And then, importantly, we tied it all together with the governance documents. So, we had these discussions. There was a commercial agreement. And I think it's important to point, these weren't always easy conversations, even though, the business was doing the right thing, tackling these issues head on. There were still some moments that got quite emotional, people's views on how their contribution should be valued and things like that, and what they wanted to see in the documents. There were times when, it was a pretty robust negotiation. But I think during that process where everyone got a say, everyone got to voice their concerns, and ultimately what the documents provided for was something that was the end result of that process, I think was a really good outcome for the client.
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. I mean, to me, there's a lot of excellent ideas there, and it seems to really come back to open and honest conversations and then good documentation of what's been agreed. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. We will be back next week with part two of this episode, where we will discuss what happens when there's a complete breakdown between the parties, what owners should keep in mind when they're negotiating a restructure involving the exit of an owner, and issues to consider if you are the person leaving the organisation. As always, please get in touch with us. If you have any questions, you can find our details on our website, which is hallandwilcox.com.au, or connect with us on LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed today's episode, then rate, review, or follow our podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is not legal advice and should not be relied upon as such. You should always obtain legal advice about your specific circumstances.